Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name's Barbara P. from Georgia and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, August 14th, and today we're reading from the Big Book and we'll be on paragraph or page 39, the first paragraph, that may be true of certain non-alcoholic, and then through, let us take another illustration. Today's readers are going to be Joni C. on the 12 Steps, Susan R., 12 Traditions, LCM on our text, Ken W.H. will be reading our closing, Penny C.'s hanging in the background waiting to back us up if needed. We've got Anne Marie as our newcomer greeter, and Leah S. will be with you for the second hour. Kathy S. will be doing announcements. So the reference numbers for yesterday, in case you want to take a listen, is Tuesday, August 13th. The 7 a.m. meeting is 21650. The 10 a.m. is 21651. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So will Joni C. step up and read our 12 steps for us?
Yes. Good morning. This is Joni C., gratefully recovered but not cured from Minnesota. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Oh, thanks, Joni C. We appreciate you. And I'll now ask Susan R. from Rhode Island to do read our 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Susan R., recovering in Rhode Island. And here are the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, the loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Oh, thanks, Susan R. So how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press *1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press *1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. So today we're going to resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 39, the first paragraph. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people. And through the end of that paragraph, let us take another illustration. And I believe that Elsie M. from Pennsylvania is going to kick us off this morning. Elsie, go right ahead.
Hi, this is Elsie M. from Pennsylvania. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at a present time, are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. But the actual or potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is the point we wish to emphasize and to smash home upon our alcoholic readers, as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Let us take another illustration. So, I tried to educate myself about diets and about nutrition. I bought book after book of diets, and I bought books about how the body breaks down calories and all that stuff. And in my other addiction, I thought self-knowledge was going to be the end all, the be all and the end all. And of course, it's not. I prayed to the God of intellect. That was my God. I was proud of my ability to get not only a bachelor's degree, but a master's degree. I felt that intellect was the way to go. And we learned in this program, and I learned it in my other program, that that didn't work. That it revealed to us out of a bitter experience that I had relapsed time and time again, and I was gaining the weight time and time again. I was bitterly unhappy in my life. I was depressed. I was just in this negative, dark place. because I could not stop eating. And I wanted to be free of this obsession, but I didn't know how. So I was locked in this awful prison of not knowing what to do. And it wasn't until I learned about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. That was what was the, that helped me understand that this was something that I could not handle on my own. And then I learned that the 12 steps were the way out. And I learned that through this program and through these meetings. And I have, you know, been able to have, I'm now a recovered compulsive overeater. And I have freedom today like I've never had before. So that's all I have. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Elsie M. from Pennsylvania, for getting us kicked off. So we'll be taking a list of names, and although we value your experience, we just ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. But if you'd like to share, again, no abstinence requirement for sharing. This is open to everybody, and we love new voices. Who'd like to share on this paragraph?
Lisa B., South Carolina.
Tina
S. Janet
B. Florida.
Christina J. Rita P.
All right, let me tell you who I have heard, and then I'll get more names. I'm sure I missed some of you. Lisa B., Tina, Janet, Christina, Joanne, and Nancy P. Who did I miss that's already said their name?
Bonnie B.
Carolyn S.
You got you, Bonnie. And tell me after Bonnie, Rowana, was it?
Carolyn S. Can you hear me?
And Reva P.
And Reva. I think I'm missing somebody, but let's go ahead and then we're going to open up for round two. So who I've got? I've got Lisa B., Tina S., Janet B., Christina, Joanna, Nancy P., Bonnie B., Carolyn, and Reva P., I believe. So let's go ahead and start there. So sorry, yeah, it's hard in the jumble. So Lisa B., let's go ahead with you, and you'll be followed by Tina S.
Oh, good morning, moderator. Can you hear me okay? This is Lisa.
Yeah, sure can, Lisa.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. My name is Lisa B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in South Carolina, and I spell my name L-E-S-A. You know, I love this reading, and the thing that really jumped out for me is bitter experience. It's bitter experience that has taught me, but, you know, I can so easily forget the bitter experience it has taught me if I don't keep coming around and if I don't keep sharing with others. And, you know, for so long, I tried to just live this self-contained, like all the answers were inside of me. And I will just try and figure this out and work this out. But sharing with other recovered compulsive eaters, you know, when I came on this line, on this meeting, and introduced myself as a newcomer, and I started receiving calls, and you guys were lifelines. It was beams of light that came into my life where I was hearing sanity and a solution. And you guys talked about yourself. You didn't talk about me and ask, you know, all this stuff about me. You shared your own experience. And that's why, you know, when I work with newcomers, I always encourage them, call recovered fellows or put your name out there so they can call you and they'll say, well, I don't want to be a bother. But no, it's just so not a bother, because as a recovered fellow today, you know, I need to be sharing who and what I am. And try to, you know, share that, and perhaps it'll help others. But it talks about this basis of self-knowledge, and I just wanted to be, like, contained inside of me and figure everything out inside of me, and I can't. It's a we program, you know. It's just so wonderful. And to keep coming back and to hearing all of you and to be sharing with all of you on a regular basis, daily basis, it is just such a gift. And I love how it talks about that the non-alcoholic person, you know, they look like me and they act like me in many ways. And I have to get that I am not like them. And I love the first paragraph on page, it's either 42 or 44. It's the very first paragraph in We Agnostics, where it also gives a great description, you know, of what a real alcoholic, what a real compulsive overeater is. And it's being reemphasized, smashing home. That's what this whole book is about, you know, smashing home. And it is out of our bitter experience. So I'm grateful to be here and to be abstinent and to be recovered. Thank you. I pass.
Great. Thanks so much, Lisa B. Lisa with an L-E-S-A. Tina S., you'll be on, followed by Janet B. Tina, go right ahead.
Thanks so much, Barbara. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Wow, what a great meeting. Love the shares. And, you know, my head's just shaking up and down. Yep, me too. You know, this stuff of self-knowledge, you know, I also love that it says that the non-alcoholic people, you know, they can able to stop or moderate because their brain is not, their brain and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. You know, I did a lot of damage to my body and to my brain, you know, but, you know, I listened to this speaker that, you know, I have to laugh every time, but I can just so relate. He always says, what I think I know is going to kill me for sure. And that's just the truth. What I think I know is going to kill me, you know, and one of the things that, you know, because I too thought, you know, hey, you know, I'm pretty intelligent. You know, I've done all this stuff in my life. You know, I did good in academics and, you know, all kind of stuff. But when it comes to this disease, you know, I am powerless. You know, my brain is not like others, you know. And today, the good news is that I know that I cannot stop on the basis of self-knowledge. You know, that I know that there has to be a power greater than myself that restores me to sanity and it gives me the opportunity to be transformed through the 12 steps. To be a different person, you know, not just other things to be different, for me to be a different person, to show up differently in my life so that I can be of service, you know, so that I can participate in a life today. And I love that. I think it was the first reader talking about freedom. I love to hear the word freedom because I am free today. My brain is free of all this compulsions of do I eat, don't I eat, where do I get it? When do I get it? You know, I don't think about that today. You know, I have a food plan that I follow. I have a sponsor. I sponsor people. So today, one day at a time, I have the opportunity not to be that same person. But I am not foolish enough to believe that I can never be that same person. So I have to continue to do what I'm doing. If I want what I have, I have to continue. And I always say this, I'm a person of more, so I want more. So I'm going to continue to do what we do one day at a time. And with that, I'll pass. Really looking forward to hearing some more shares. Thanks.
Thanks, Tina. Tina S. from Florida. Janet B., go right ahead. You're up for 3 minutes.
Hi. Good morning. This is Janet B., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. So, yeah, they're telling us that we're absolutely unable to stop for us eating on the basis of self-knowledge. And then they say, this is a point we want to emphasize, reemphasize, to smash home. So that means they think this is something we're not going to get. We're not going to get it. So what is it they think we're not going to get? That a first step alone will do it, right? For years, I was in Overeaters Anonymous. I knew I was powerless over food. I knew my life was a total train wreck. That did nothing for me. I mean, right, imagine a guy who realizes, you know, he's got a brain tumor and says, okay, now I know my headache's caused by a brain tumor. Now I'll just make it go away. It doesn't work that way. And so there's a lot of times when there are people who go off their food plan, start eating compulsively again, and we automatically say, you don't have a first step. But that's not true, right? Our book is telling us right now that we can have a first step and we will still be absolutely unable to stop. So I think, you know, sometimes we can be doing people a disservice if they eat compulsively and we automatically say there's no first step, right? Because our book gives us so many reasons why a person could eat compulsively. I'll just rattle off a few. In the end of How It Works, it says, if we fall down on our sex ideal, if we hurt others and we're not sorry, it says we are quite sure to drink. In the chapter of Family Afterwards, it says, if we fail to show unselfishness and love under our own roof, we are not likely to get far in any direction. It says if we don't lose our fear of creditors when making amends, we're going to pick up. And I think for me, just the most important thing for me to always remember is that a first step alone doesn't do it. I have to live a life surrendered to God as best I can, doing His will as best I can, clearing away the wreckage that I cause each day as best I can. Because even though I've learned about it, talked about the broken bridge over and over, that alone, that knowledge that I'm a compulsive eater won't help me. Only the grace of God will help me. Only a miracle will help me. Thank God this program teaches me how to have a miracle in 12 simple but not always easy steps. So I just want to make sure, I just want to really say that I strongly believe that if someone picks up, it is not always a first step issue. It is often a failure on our part to totally surrender everything to our loving God. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet B. from North Carolina. Now Christina J. from North Carolina. Step right up.
Good morning. Morning, everyone. Christina J. from North Carolina here in recovery. This journey is so painful. You know, it started way back when, and through the years, I controlled it with diet, self-knowledge. If I put down the sugar, I'd be, you know, if I got thin, if I got this, if I got that, if I had it all, I'd be happy. That was self-knowledge that was busted over and over and over. I was thin. I was model beautiful. I was completely a mess inside. And so when I came into program and I started getting the knowledge of program that I have an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind, first of all, I had the pink cloud experience. Yeah, I'm going to do everything my sponsor says. I'm going to do this. And I began to pick up after a while. You know, it started with overeating my absent foods, and then it went on into full-blown, you know, and then trying to get back. I had 3 years of recovery. And then that went downhill again. I had to try every bit of self-knowledge that I could find. And, you know, the knowledge in the head does not work. The experiential knowledge of the pain of picking up. I am so grateful for my relapses. Relapse after relapse brought me pain after pain, which has sunk down like a thick, evil liquid into my bones now. And I don't want to pick up again. I do not want it. This is what I have inside of myself today because of my relapses, because doing these steps with the knowledge of the steps, the knowledge of my allergy, the knowledge of what they're going to do for me, my dis-ease of my soul, it's going to help me heal. So when I go through personal struggle and frustration, you know, I have this program to help me move through that, you know, and so I don't have to go back to that horrible guilt, shame, hiding, pain, isolation of this disease because I don't have to live on self-knowledge anymore. I'm living on that evil pain that's in my bones today. Every time I think of picking up, I think, pick up the phone because I can't go back. And that's why I'm so grateful for my wicked, disgusting relapses. Because that's the knowledge I needed. And people say, well, the pain won't save you. No, it won't. Unless you have that pain and you're working this program. Because as you're working this program, as someone else shared, you're sharing with other people what you went through and they're sharing where they're at. And you're reminded over and over and over. And of course, the tip of the iceberg and the beautiful piece on top of the beautiful program is that God is there with me, the grace of God, as long as I'm taking those action steps towards God every day. And you know what? I'll finish up. When I take these action steps, I'm working towards God. I am doing God's work. I'm having a connection with a higher power. So don't worry about having a connection. As long as you're doing these steps, you are connecting. So anyway, thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Oh, thanks, Christina J., North Carolina. Joanne, and I think it's Joanne B., but I'm not sure. Joanne? You're up, and you'll be followed. Oh, and I'm so sorry. Let me interrupt 1 second and just remind people where we are in case they just came in. So stand by, Joanne. It's page 39, first paragraph. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people. So go ahead, Joanne.
Good morning, Joanne B., calling in from Vermont. Recovering compulsive overeater. Thanks for this meeting and the reading. What this makes me think about is you know, my journey, the journey that got me here, which was the journey of, like they say, self-knowledge and or knowledge just in general. It's like, okay, well, if I, you know, I'm doing, if I follow this certain program, this certain diet, it says that I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to be able to, you know, not eat the sugar and, you know, be able to keep the weight off. And I did follow this. I found this great program, and this has been like the third or fourth time that I tried a different diet, and it seemed to be working. It seemed to be working great, and it did work great for a while until it didn't work. And, you know, the thing about those types of things, you know, back before I came into OA, it was all about, like, okay, how I looked. Wasn't really, you know, about the inside and what was going on with me inside. It was more about the surface. I want to fit into this dress. I want to look good. I want to look like those other women I see on Instagram. I want to be fit. I was suffering. You know, I was suffering because I was so obsessed with that. And that's an obsession, you know, that obsession of the mind. And, you know, it's just, I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought this morning a little bit. So I, you know, I would tell people, I think sugar is just like alcohol for me. It's like a drug. I can't really eat it. Sugar, and I knew that, and I had that self-knowledge, but it didn't help at all. The only thing that helped was surrendering and saying, I can't do this. I need help. And the minute I walked into OA, into an OA meeting, I knew that I was home. And I said, these people understand me. This is the problem. And it was such a relief that I didn't have to do this anymore. I didn't have to fight this anymore, that I had to just surrender and listen and take guidance from other people who have gone through this, and also, like, work on establishing a relationship with a higher power. And I got some news yesterday that was very unsettling and upsetting. Not earth, you know, life-threatening, but fine. Something that rocked my world. And I thank you. I'll just finish up by saying I prayed about it and I asked for help. And this morning I'm feeling better. And that's what I get out of this program, is that relationship with my higher power. And a connection with others who are suffering like me. So thanks. I'll pass.
Great. Thank you, Joanne B. from Vermont. Nancy P., and you'll be followed by Bonnie B. from Florida.
Hi, good morning. Nancy P. recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. Actually, I'm in Detroit now, or whatever, someplace close to there. The actual or potential alcoholic without, not hardly, I tell my sponsors, without an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. So, okay, everybody's given excellent shares on this. And, you know, yeah, it's kind of a step one issue, which is appropriate because step one is totally important. But good for me, you know, like, you know, it's okay, so I'm entirely I'm incapable of doing that. Now what am I going to do? And it doesn't even matter. Do, you know, write a fourth step. Do a fifth step. I wrote a fourth step 1 hour a night, six nights a week for 3 years, and it was 550 pages. And it didn't take, and I ate for 13 more years until I finally recovered. And the reason for that is because it talks about this. This is about, we're all smart. There's doctors, lawyers, teachers, nurses, police officers, you know, salesmen, vice presidents, you know, everybody belongs to them. And none of us are dumb, or very few of us. And I don't need spiritual understanding. I need to be spiritually awake. And my life is sort of revolves around that concept. Like, you know, when I get a resentment or when I get afraid or when I get angry or whatever I get, what I don't want is to go to the food. Okay, also good. But I don't want to live in that space. I don't want to be owned by my feelings. And the only way to even recognize that is to see, you know, how awake am I? And there's a lot of ways of being asleep. I can be, you know, deep sleep, REM sleep, daydreaming, you know, staring off into space, you know, catnap, all kinds of ways of not being conscious. So this knowledge that, not knowledge, but this awareness of my spiritual life has become part of my working mind, right? It became a working part of my mind. It's part of how I think. So the only bad thing about that is that if I don't keep up the work that I do, then I'm going to forget. It's a muscle that has to be used constantly. And so I spend the time and the effort necessary to make sure that I'm awake. And you know, life is kind, because when I start to doze off at the wheel, I get a jolt and I say, looks like I need some, you know, spiritual caffeine, because I forget sometimes who I am. That's why I love the word absolute. Absolutely. It's one of my five most important words in the whole book, you know, followed by, you know, absolute, complete, entire, utter, and nothing. Those are my five most important words, because I'm never going to change and I'm never going to get better. I mean, I'm never going to be cured. But I can tell you that if anything could cure me, as others have said, it's working with other people. And I don't just want relief. I want serenity. You know, the five. I have five things that I go for. I don't want to hurt myself with food. I want to help other people. I'll wrap up. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I want to comprehend the word serenity, and I want to know peace. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. Bonnie B. from Florida. You're up, followed by Caroline. Carolyn. Carolyn.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for your service this morning. Grateful to be here. Recovered compulsive overeater Bonnie B. from Florida. You know, this entire chapter just blows my mind, because over and over and over, what it's doing is helping me to ask myself the question. You know, other people can tell me what they think, and I can listen to their stories, and that's all good, and that's all helpful. And I needed that, because when I came into program, I did feel like I had found the right fish tank for the first time. But I still needed to come to the conclusion myself. And so when they toss out this sentence, you know, that may be true of certain non-alcoholic people, but if you're really an alcoholic person, and to me it's a question mark, right? They're tossing it back into my court, which is what I consider the gift of this program. I don't get to tell anyone else what they should or shouldn't do. I just get to, share my experience and then ask some questions, you know, ask some questions and leave the questions open-ended, because deep down, I knew the answers. I knew. Now, I didn't necessarily want to believe it, and that's why I kept trying different options, but deep down at a certain point, it locked in. I have a different DNA. I do. I have the same DNA as the people who are speaking with me on the phone lines, and at a certain point, the pain becomes a great motivator. And but I just want to, like, you know, reemphasize what I heard earlier, and I love it. It's not lack of desire or willpower. It's lack of power. It was not a step one for me. It really was like understanding, coming to terms with the fact that if I don't connect to God, you know, what I call God, if I don't connect to God and stay connected to God, I'm going to go back into resentment. And on page 64, it says resentment is the number one offender. Well, I've got a whole long list of things that present themselves as resentments: pride, vanity, selfishness, self-seeking, jealousy, envy. They crop up and they masquerade as something other than this disease. But if I live in that for more than 3 seconds, I'm going back, because resentment is the number one offender. So it's the revelation / understanding that when I lose that peace, which the big book says is restless, irritable, and discontent, I have disconnected from God. If I disconnect from God and stay disconnected, game over for me. Food is always a step up. And so this is a kind, loving program with a lot of truth. And people kept loving me back by asking the questions. And I had to draw that conclusion myself. And I'm grateful, so grateful for so many reasons. And with that, I'll pass. Blessings to you all.
Oh, thanks so much. Bonnie B. from Florida. Carolyn, you are up. You'll be followed by Reva, and then we'll be taking another list of names.
Hi, this is Carolyn S., recovered in New York. I've read the big book in this chapter countless times, but what really jumped out to me today is the part in the middle of this paragraph where it says, because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were, brain damage. That's what jumped out at me today. And I was like, oh my God, when I think of brain damage, I think of somebody who's been in a car accident, who is, mentally handicapped, forever. And I never connected the fact that my thinking was twisted to the fact that my brain has actually been damaged. I mean, it can be healed insofar as my behavior goes, but there's a part of me that is just not healthy and never will be. I wake up every morning an untreated addict, and I have to do what works the day before and more if I want to stay healthy. If I'm a diabetic, I have to take insulin regularly. It's not a one and done. Wow, do I wish it were. But, we have this disease. It is fatal, it can be if we don't treat it. This program gives me tools for living a happy life and a useful life, which is even more important because that's what my God wants. My God wants me to be focused not on, navel gazing, but on looking out and seeing who out there could use my help. And when I live in that way, when I focus on what I can do for others instead of what do I want and what do I have and what do I not have that I want, yada, yada, that's when I'm getting into the disease. I'm going into that brain damaged part and expecting intelligent ideas to come out. It's not going to work. I need to rely on a power greater than myself and not just other people. I mean, all my fellows that I'm close to in program, which really involves everybody because you all know what it is to have this disease and can understand in a way that, my other friends and family cannot. I have damage that will not be completely erased. But by working this program, by staying in touch with all the realities, the relapse, that's how I can live a sane and useful life today. And I'm so grateful for that and for my higher power and all of you. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Carolyn S. from New York. Reva P., you're up. And then we'll be taking another list of names.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. The words that really strike me this morning are emphasize, reemphasize, absolutely, and smash. And I remember it says previously that the delusion that I'm like other people has to be smashed. And when I think of something being smashed, it's in a million thousand pieces and it can't be put back together again. So this whole chapter tells me the same thing over and over and over. It tells me that information does not result in a transformation. Information that I'm a real compulsive overeater, information that I have a physical allergy and mental obsession alone is not going to help me. And lack of knowledge, like people have said, lack of desire, wanting it, needing it, is not my problem. It's lack of power. So if I want to have, and I can't make the transformation, I can't will a transformation, but what the steps do is it clears the blockages. So I access this power. That's what I need. That's why more about alcoholism to me just segues right into we agnostics, because if I really, really get this smashed home, I need power. So the whole point of the steps is to keep me connected to this power. And when the grace of that power comes in, I have neutrality. I don't pick up the food. And, you know, for me, this doesn't apply only to food. It applies to the other things that take me back to the food, the resentments, the fears. I know resentment is the number one offender from this book. I know fear is the evil and corroding thread. That alone is nothing. I have to do the work and take the actions, and something miraculous happens when I do step after step after step. I get a spiritual transformation. My thoughts, attitudes, beliefs transform. That is the grace of God coming in. It's like lifting up the shade. The light just streams right in. I don't effort the light in. It just comes. And if I stay in the light and constantly seek this power, the food is quiet, and I don't act like a crazy dry drunk in resentment and fear. And do I do it perfectly? No. But that is what this journey is, constantly staying in the light, staying in my lane, in God's lane, and keeping that power source there. And then it's just the grace that we get to be recovered. So with that, I pass.
Oh, thanks, Reva P. from Toronto. Right, we have time for probably maybe four more shares. Who would like to share page 39, first paragraph?
Leia S.
Jennifer C.
R. I heard Leia S., Jen C., Hanietta.
Renee.
Sorry, was it Anita J? I think I heard in the background. I'm sorry. That's, I think, what we're going to have time for. We'll see. We'll go and we'll see what we can do. So let's step right up with Leia S., followed by Jen C.
Thank you so much, Barbara. My name is Leia S., and I'm in upstate New York, and I'm so grateful to be recovered and to continue learning this program. So today something came upon me when we read this, and I heard all the shares on page 39. More about alcoholism is about identifying whether I'm an alcoholic. That means whether I'm a compulsive overeater. But it not only tells me that, it also tells me that there is a way to combat somehow the behavior that I have been exhibiting all along, and to actually halt it, to smash it, so that it doesn't, you know, this behavior doesn't repeat itself. And what I wanted to bring out is that prayer of set aside everything I know, dear God, and set aside everything that I think I know about situations and people and myself and everything about me. And that brings me to humility and to this big book, to understand that there is a higher power that is actually running my life, and I've got to go right according to those steps so that I can allow that spirit and that positivity to come into my mind, and then just be open-minded to it. And it's like I heard over here, it is a journey. It is a journey, and you can never go wrong if you stay with this journey. And with that, I pass.
Great. Thanks so much, Leia S. from New York. Jen C., you're up, and you'll be followed by Hanietta R. from Texas.
Good morning. Jennifer C., Greenville, South Carolina, recovered by God's grace, power, love, way of life, all the things, right? Took me a long time to get recovered. Took me a long, long time. Lots of sponsors, lots of food plans, lots of step work. And what I came to the conclusion of was that there was a difference between the step I was working with my sponsor, the assignments I was being assigned, and the step I was actually on.
what step am I actually on when I go through this process, right? And only God knows where I am in my surrender process, because that's what these steps are all about, is my own personal surrender process. And you can tell me that I need to surrender, right? You can tell me that I need a psychic change and a spiritual experience, but that's also more self-knowledge that has no power, right? Like, I know what I need. Okay, now I know I need a psychic change. I need to surrender. I need to surrender. I just have to surrender. Well, good luck. Good luck surrendering, right? I can surrender to the best of my own human ability to surrender. But what this book teaches me is that my roots have to grasp a new soil. God has to do for me what I'm unable to do for myself. Well, how do I reconcile that with, you know, you got to do the work, right? And at the very same time that I'm doing this work, like my life depends on it because it does, I have to know every single step of the way that this is God working through me, doing for me what I cannot ultimately do in my own power. I cannot make myself grasp a new soil. I cannot change the roots of my own soil. God is the gardener of my heart. God knows where I truly am in my surrender process. And what I see in Bill's story was that, you know, he had to look at his pride and he had to look at his prejudice. How did he come to this place of true surrender where he never drank again? He never drank again. It wasn't about assignments that he was doing either. It was about truly needing and wanting God, truly facing his own pride, truly facing his own prejudice. What was he holding against God? And all of a sudden, none of that mattered anymore, because all he knew was that he was so desperate for the presence of God in his life. He so desperately needed what Ebby had. He was willing to set aside everything that was blocking him from receiving God's presence in his life. So may we trust and rely upon infinite God today rather than our finite selves. And with that, I pass.
Great. Thanks, Jennifer C. Hani Yatsar, you're up, and you'll be followed by Anita J.
Hi. Could I also ask you where Jennifer is from?
Oh, I didn't catch it, so I don't know.
Thank you. It's okay. I'm Hannah Yetta R. from Texas. Oh, and where it talks about the brain, they couldn't stop because their brain and bodies haven't been damaged as ours were. Well, I'm the ours were. My brain has been damaged so much that I actually found out when they did an MRI of my brain that I actually have a brain, first of all. And I also have chronic microvascular disease, which is a brain disease. And the main reason, the main cause is untreated diabetes and high blood pressure. And that's what happened every time I picked back up and went into relapse, I was causing my brain to have these vascular problems. And it's a terrifying, but not terrifying, because I know that God has it all under control. So when I first found out, it was like the wreckage of my past was the first thing that came to my mind. And but thank God I'm not doing that today, because I have trust and faith and I'm working these steps. And my main concern today is to stay in conscious contact with my higher power that I call God, and to stay on these meetings. I come every day if I possibly can. And I don't think I've missed many in the last 8.5 months. And I'm and I'm working my steps. And the whole thing, though, is a miracle. I mean, the fact that I'm abstinent today and that I'm working these programs, because people have told me I have all sorts of things in the past and I could never, I didn't get abstinent. So, so that wasn't it. What was it is that I surrendered, as a lot of people say in this meeting, surrender, surrender, surrender. I surrendered, and I trust. And that I just want to tell everybody out there, if you're struggling, if you're new, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. It will happen if you stick around. The miracle is out there for you. Just put out your hand and open it up and just ask your higher power to grant you a miracle. That's all it takes. Thank you for letting me share. And thank you for your service. I forget your name. Anyway.
Great. Thank you so much, Janietta R. from Texas. This is Barbara P. from Georgia. And Jennifer C., try and get in touch with Janietta. She's looking for you. And I'm so sorry I didn't catch that state on her. Anita J., you go right ahead. You've got 3 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is Anita J. I'm recovered in Westboro, Massachusetts. You know, I have an image of how desperate Bill wants us all to get it, you know, to emphasize and re-emphasize and smash home. And I just picture a Raggedy Ann doll just shaking it and shaking it. You get it? You get this? You can't figure this out by yourself. Get it? Get it? And the funny thing is, no, that didn't work. Shaking me or scolding me or acting as if, what's wrong with you? Why don't you get it? The funny thing was, when I finally thought, oh, God, I don't know what I'm doing. Help me. I don't know what I'm doing. Then the little small voice didn't need any shaking. It just said, follow me. And how do I follow my higher power? I follow him through the 12 steps. It's the pathway. I had a God. I didn't know how to really, really use him. And all has been revealed, just paragraph by paragraph. It's just a miracle. Yeah, this is a modern-day miracle, this Alcoholics Anonymous book, isn't it? And with that, I gratefully pass.
Well, thanks so much, Anita J. And we have time for one more kind of two-minute share. Would somebody like that 2 minutes?
Rivka R.
Okay, Rivka R., go right ahead. And by the way, everybody, stay tuned because the second hour is more of these amazing shares. So, Rivka, go right ahead.
Hi, good morning, everybody, and thank you, Barbara, for your service. The thing that jumped out at me was absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge, and I was a self-knowledge junkie. any book, any therapist, just could give me that insight that would stop me. I was desperate. There's got to be some insight in there, something that once I get, this will just be gone. And even my husband said to me, maybe there's something that's fueling it. And thank God I have this program today. And I love what someone shared about being spiritually awake, because I was so spiritually in a fog that I did not know who I was. To be spiritually awake to myself and how I show up and what I do and also who I can be with this program is where it's at for me. So thanks for listening, and I pass.
Oh, thanks, Rivka R. So perfect timing. So I want to thank everyone who shared. And please join us for that second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. Lots of good, powerful shares today. Thank you, everyone. Today's, if you want to listen to it again, today's recording is 21653. So, and there'll be directions in between the meetings about how to get to that. But you can listen again if you want to take notes. We'll now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Ken W.H., would you please read A Vision for You, starting with Our Book is Meant to be Suggestive Only, through Keep You Until Then. Ken, star one, we don't hear you yet. All right, we'll give Ken a second to get on, and if not, Penny C., could you stand by and have that ready? Put you on the spot. Yeah, Penny, any chance you can? If not, I've got it. All right, I'm going to go ahead and step in on that one. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Oh, great, Penny, got it. Go for it.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.